Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. Today's show will feature an interview with Giants beat writer Zach Rosenblatt of NJ Advanced Media in just a little bit, so stay tuned for that. First, just a couple things to talk about. Your Giants are off for the summer, basically. Summer officially starts here in a couple of days. Giants are off for the summer now that OTAs, mini camp are done. We won't see them until, I believe it's July 27, when NFL players report for training camp. So the Giants have a few weeks off, but here at Big Blue View, we never rest. We'll have plenty of Giants coverage to keep you entertained, keep you informed, get you ready for the 2021 NFL season throughout the summer here on Big Blue View Radio with my show, with shows done by Chris Flum, Joe DeLeon, and Nick Filato as we talk about anything and everything to do with your New York Giants, with the NFC East, with the upcoming schedule, with the NFL at large, as a matter of fact. At BigBlueView.com, we're running a series that we do every year, 90-man roster profiles. We'll do a breakdown of every single player on the roster. We're about a third of the way through those at this point. If you haven't been reading those, please stop by the website, try to catch up on those. There's an easy-to-read story stream which lists everything that we've written so far, each player that we have profiled up to this point. Thursday, I believe, was Adoree Jackson. Friday will be Rizin John, so that should be up sometime on Friday for your reading pleasure. We're also getting our annual summer school series going. Chris Flum usually takes the lead on that as we try to educate you on various aspects of football. It's sort of a football 101 series we do every year. Chris does a fantastic job, you know, breaking things down. He'll have help this summer from Nick Filato. He'll probably have help from Mark Schofield as well as we bring you a summer school series. The first piece is already up at Big Blue View. That was a piece basically breaking down 11 personnel, something that obviously we see a lot, but we did that piece to help people understand why it's used, what its benefits are, what its drawbacks might be, and how it might fit into the offensive scheme for your Giants in 2021. In addition to that, we'll have we have videos from Emory Hunt on our YouTube channel. Our Instagram page is updated as often as we can. Our Facebook page is updated daily. So please, you know, continue to read Big Blue View. Continue to check us out on all of our various platforms as we keep you informed and get you ready for your 2021 New York Giants football season. All right, Giants fans, let's get to the interview that I did with Zach Rosenblatt of NJ Advanced Media. All right, Giants fans, I'm joined now by Giants beat reporter Zach Rosenblatt of NJ Advanced Media. Hey, Zach, thank you very, very much for taking some time out to join the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Ed. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, so we are in the throes of the off season here, and And we're all doing, you know, 53 man roster projections and camp battles and those kinds of things as we look forward to training camp. And you and I both did the 53 man roster thing. And I was kind of amazed at how similar both predictions are, but I guess where I'll start, I have one sort of surprise cut, I will say. The one guy that I have been leaving off my 53-man roster projections is O'Shane Zimenez. And some people wonder why. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I will tell you why. I just had the impression a year ago that he wasn't a favorite of this coaching staff. And with all of the additions on the edge, I wonder if he's a guy that's got to come to camp and prove that he belongs. Just maybe we'll start with your reaction to that. And maybe when you think about it, you know, one guy that most people think is going to make this roster that you think might not.
I think Zimenez is probably the best answer for that, honestly. Before minicamp, and I can't even remember if it was before OTAs or not, I did like a thing where I basically went through every guy in the roster and categorized them, whether they were on the bubble, a long shot, or like a lock to make the team. And I was surprised at how like easy it was to put O'Shane on the bubble area. And it makes sense if you look at it. Like, you know, this coaching staff didn't draft him. He didn't look very good before he got hurt last year. Like, I mean, he didn't play very many games, but he got hurt early in the season. And before that, he didn't make an impression on it. Like, Lorenzo looked like he might have been ready to have a good season finally, and then he got hurt. O'Shane, you didn't see that from. He didn't flash really. He was okay as a rookie, not great. He needs to have a good. I've been thinking about this lately. Like, there's going to be a Ryan Connolly type of cut this year, you would think, just because, especially because this team is deeper now. And I've said this to people. I think the roster cutdowns is going to be more exciting to cover this year because you have like some bigger name guys that maybe aren't going to, you know, be a locks to make the team. But yeah, I think O'Shane is probably the best answer for that, to be honest with you. If we're thinking like just like surprises, if I had to pick someone who, you know, I like would be a surprise that I don't necessarily think is going to get cut, at someone I've been thinking about is Darnay Holmes. I really like him personally. I think he's a good player. I think he can become a good player, at least. I think he showed flashes last year. But they did trade up to draft a guy in the third round. They drafted another corner in this draft. So I think Darnay, like, I think he's going to make the team ultimately, but if you're thinking like someone who, if he has a bad camp and we get down to the 53-man cut down and we're surprised by a name not being on the roster, I think he's somebody who would be interesting.
Darnay is a really interesting choice. And I don't know how you feel about this, you know, but there's certain guys when you watch the team every day and you talk to guys and you think about it, there's certain guys that maybe you can't confirm, you know, what you think, but you get kind of a nagging feeling about certain guys. And my nagging feeling about Darnay Holmes is I thought he had a pretty good rookie season, but yes, he got hurt at the end of the year and he missed a couple games, but when Xavier McKinney got healthy and got back on the field,
he was playing a lot of nickel.
Xavier McKinney played nickel and Darnay Holmes didn't play. And it made me wonder just how this coaching staff actually feels about Darnay Holmes. I don't know if you had the same thought.
Yeah, no, I've been thinking about that a lot. Cause I'm like you. I thought, you know, I mean, he got targeted a lot, but he was a fourth round pick playing every game. But I thought he did show some flashes last year. I mean, I'm not like quite the level of like a football expert as this coaching staff, obviously. But I kind of had the same thought. You know, once they re-sign Logan Ryan, you know, they bring back Xavier, who's obviously going to play a lot. They used a second round pick on him last year, and they still have Jabril around here, and you trade for Aaron Robinson, and they keep saying how they believe Adoree Jackson can play inside if he has to. Like, that, everything they've said and pointed to, like, points to that. But at the same time, like, it's funny, like, anytime we talk to someone like Logan Ryan, he always brings up Darnay Holmes without us even asking him about it. Like, he mentions him as, like, one of the guys on the team. So I feel like within the position room, I think they like him quite a bit. I am curious what the coaches and Joe Judge think about him because, I mean, their actions, you have to, you can only base it off their actions. Their actions indicate they're not very high in him, but I don't know. I mean, I think he could be a starter quality player in the league. Maybe they don't view it that way. I know he worked at punt returner during mini camp, and that was kind of a disaster. I think he muffed a few of those. So it's going to be very, I mean, I think he still has a chance to start, be the nickel in week one if he has a good camp, but he's not the favorite, I don't think, at this point, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when you think about training camp and you think about the secondary, and I'm going to put safety together with cornerback as I think about it, because there's so many interchangeable parts in there. And there are guys that, you know, Bradbury's a corner, Adoree Jackson is a corner, Logan Ryan is technically a safety, but, you know, but he can drop down. Xavier McKinney is the same way. Julian Love is the same way. You know, Jabril Peppers is technically a safety, but the way the Giants use him, he's on the line of scrimmage a lot.
Yeah.
So you could almost consider him, and I think we'll actually see him play some sort of pseudo linebacker at times this year.
Because that's how you get Xavier onto the field, really, right? You put
right closer to him. Yeah. I think the battle for roster spots at defensive back is to me one of the most interesting parts of training camp. Agree?
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of interesting names back there. I mean, you look at, they're probably going to bring back Nate Ebner, which is going to make it even harder to make the team for bottom of the roster guys. Whether, I mean, hopefully Ebner never has to play another defensive snap.
Agreed.
yeah, I mean, you look at corner like Isaac Yiadom. I know fans are like always quick to like make fun of him, but I think there was a stretch there where he played pretty well last year. I know he's not a guy you want to be your number two corner, obviously, but I mean, as like your fourth or fifth corner, like I'm okay with that. I mean, Sam Beal's gone. You would think. They drafted Rodarius Williams. I mean, it's hard to get an impression in minicamp. I didn't really notice him. I mean, they clearly liked him enough to draft him. And if Joe Judge is drafting you, I feel like he thinks you can make the team. And it's kind of like his thing. I don't think I'm missing it. I mean, it seemed like Jaren Williams got some pretty good reps in minicamp as well. But yeah, man, they have a pretty deep group. And Julian Love is even an interesting name as a guy that, like, I don't think this coaching staff was particularly high. And if you look at how they just like continually refused to use him at every chance they could until the very end, when he finally played an outside corner and looked okay, but it took them that long. And, you know, there was a point where like Adrian Colbert was playing ahead of him at safety. So to go back to like the surprising name cut or whatever, I think Julian Love would be a candidate as well. But it's going to be very interesting to watch that group play out. And I think the nickel corner spot, like Aaron Robinson versus Darnay, I guess even kind of versus Xavier, is going to be fun to watch in camp.
Yeah, sure it is. And you know, it's just one of the really interesting things for the Giants this year versus a year ago versus 2 years ago is, you know, I don't know how the year's going to unfold, and I don't know how Daniel Jones is going to play, but when you look up and down the roster, you know, I see starter caliber players, and I actually see good backups almost everywhere across the roster. So to me, I mean, it's taken a long time. This is Dave Gettleman's fourth year putting this team together. But to me, you know, I don't look at this roster and say, oh my God, they have nothing at this position.
Yeah,
you know, all across the roster, I see, you know, at the very least, capable players and quality backups.
Yeah, I mean, especially on defense, you can say like there's question marks at spot, but I don't think there's any necessarily like weak spots like that. Like the edge rusher is the biggest question mark on defense. You probably agree, but right. I mean, but like that depends on how you feel about like Lorenzo Carter's potential and Azeez Ojulari's ability to come in and make an impact all the way, and you know, whether Ifeadi Odenigbo can make an impact. Like they have a very interesting group at edge rusher. Like, I think
there's possibilities there. Yeah. There's no one there where you say, yeah, we're absolutely going to get, you know, the Giants are absolutely going to get double digit sacks. Yeah. They're absolutely going to get a Pro Bowl performance out of this guy. There's possibilities there.
Yeah. And I mean, and you saw last year, I think you just give Patrick Graham good enough players at those spots, he's gonna, like, they were winning with Nico Lalos last year. Like, I think that's why, I mean, they went after Leonard Floyd, but I think that's why you saw them being like okay with not like going all out to address edge rusher, because I think they they wanted to start from the back and work to the front, which I think is like a Patriots type move. And you bring Leonard Williams back, who's your best pass rusher, and you think Dexter Lawrence is going to take a leap. And so you take some flyers and hope you land one of them. You know, they're taking a, I mean, you can even argue like Lorenzo Carter is like, I mean, he's a flyer in a way, just because you don't know what you're going to get from him coming off that injury. So, so if they even hit on one of those guys, they're in really good shape. And then I think you feel pretty good about the D line, even without Dalvin Tomlinson. I feel pretty good about it still. Inside linebacker, I mean, Blake Martinez is one of their most important players. Tate Crowder is better than anybody could have expected. Probably better depth of Ragland there now. And yeah, I mean, I just think the defense in particular, we could talk about, I'm sure we'll talk about the offense, and there's definitely questions on like the offensive line and Jones and all that stuff. But like you said, like this, like talent wise, this is got, I mean, I've only covered, this is only my second season covering the Giants. I've been in the NFC East for four seasons.
Yeah, we won't talk about the team you used to cover.
But I mean, this is the most talented Giants team without a question in the last 4 years, like at least.
Sure, sure. So
the 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Let's actually do this. Let's talk about the draft a little bit. Let's talk about offense a little bit. I talked about sort of, you know, having a nagging feeling about certain guys, Darnay Holmes being one, and, you know, you talked about Julian Love a little bit, and, you know, we talked about O'Shane Zimenez, and I will say this, I loved what the Giants did in the draft, moving down. You know, it's accepted sort of, and I don't know if it's 100% true, because the Giants are never going to confirm the fact that they would have taken Devonta Smith if he was there. But that's sort of the accepted wisdom at this point. And, you know, and when Smith wasn't there and when Waddle wasn't there, they moved down. They end up taking Kadarius Toney, and you know, at number 20, loved the trade, loved the move, loved the theory of taking Kadarius Toney. But jeepers, has that kid had a weird spring or what?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed crazy. I mean, it's almost gotten overblown now because, like, you know, Florio covered it, and then because he was running with second team, which I didn't. The fact that he was running with second team is not the issue at all. I think that was probably expected, but yeah, I mean, it's been a strange mini camp OTAs. I'm sure you've talked about it a bunch on here already, but I would say I've been asked about this a bunch already. Like, and it's definitely like you have it in the back of your head. I think it's too early to get like fully concerned yet, but there's definitely like, you're thinking like, okay, this is interesting. So the funny thing is like, I did a big story. You did too. I did a big story on Kadarius, and I talked to like some of his former coaches and his dad and like people close to him. And one thing they all kept going back to was like how much he like loved practicing, how great of a practice player he was, and how hard he went every practice. Like, you never had to worry about him at practice. And it's kind of funny because the opposite has kind of been happening in mini camp. But I think once we get the training camp and it's full go, I think if we don't see that energy that everybody told me about, then I think I'll start getting concerned. But because so many people told me about how hard he practices, which is probably something that Joe Judge found out and loved, I'm sure. So I think that's what he's going to be maybe even the top of the list of things we're all going to be looking at in the training camp, which I don't know if I expect to necessarily, just because of like, you know, everybody, they're so deep at receiver in theory at this point, and they have all these other question marks. But I think he's like all anybody wants to talk, has wanted to talk about in the spring.
Unfortunately, I agree with you. It's like, it's not time to, you know, to ring the fire alarm, yeah. per se.
Be concerned.
But it's like, show us, just get on the field 2 days in a row. You know, I mean, it's an odd start for him.
Yep.
I'm not concerned at all about the fact that he ran with the second team. I mean, when you stop and you think about it, he probably enters the season as the fourth wide receiver, and you know, that's pretty much the norm when you see these rookies come into a mandatory mini camp. They don't get plugged right into a starting lineup. They sort of, you know, they take it little chunks at a time and they'll build a role. And I think that's how the Giants will probably use Kadarius Toney anyway, is as a fourth wide receiver, as a guy that's on the field with extra packages and, you know, gadget stuff. And, you know, he's not going to catch 70 balls as a rookie. I think if people think that, I think they're looking at the wrong thing. You agree with me on that?
Yeah. I think I saw like it was ESPN projections had him at like over 100 targets, which is just, I mean, if that happens, that means everybody else got hurt. That's the only way that happens. But I would say, like, it's interesting because he's not going to get a lot of targets in theory. But on the other, they did use a first round pick on the guy, so you don't draft a guy in the first round and then not play him a lot. So it's gonna be very interesting to see how they find that fine line, because you know they signed Kenny Golladay, they bring back Shepard and Slayton, and you bring back Evan Engram, and you sign Kyle Rudolph. So like, are they going to run a lot of 12 personnel? I feel like they'll run a bunch of it. And then you wonder like, who are the two receivers that are out there? So it's going to be very interesting to see if Jason Garrett can find creative ways to use these guys. I mean, he didn't show us give us a lot of confidence last year, obviously. But
you had to bring up Garrett, didn't you? You just had to.
We went a long time without bringing him up, you know.
Yeah, we actually did. And I will say this: I thought that the Giants did the right thing by bringing him back this year. I thought, because Daniel Jones, I think he had to learn a new offense his last year at Duke. I think he had to, you know, then his rookie year with the Giants and then his second year with the Giants. And at some point you've got to give the kid some continuity to, you know, to give him a chance to learn and settle in and be comfortable. But, you know, Jason Garrett's going to be a lightning rod for the Giants this year. If the offense struggles, he's without doubt a guy who is probably on a hot seat, and he's going to take a lot of heat if this offense doesn't turn around. I mean, and there's the Freddie Kitchens factor too, because the Giants can say what they want, but Freddie Kitchens is looming over his shoulder. There's no doubt about that. You see it the same way?
Absolutely. It's as if like they have the replacement like waiting to take over, kind of thing. So it's almost like, all right, you don't mess up, Jason. Don't mess up. And the interesting thing is, like, I feel like because of how bad they weren't, like they were even worse than anybody could have reasonably expected last year in offense. And it's the funny thing of, everybody thought the offense would be fine last year, and the defense is going to be a problem, and that wind up being like the complete opposite. But like what Jason has working in his favor is that there's the only way to go is up. Like there's no way Daniel Jones can play 14 games again and only get 11 touchdown passes. That already seems impossible just when you say it out loud. And then when you look at all they did this offseason, like, so, but it's ultimately going to come down to, we'll both write this a million times between now and then, it comes down to how Daniel Jones improves or not. And if the offensive line gets better, and if both of those things don't happen, then they're not going to be any good. They can be as talented as they want everywhere else, but like, that's why they took a huge risk bringing all these O-line back. They clearly believe in their talent. They changed everything in the coach staff. I think one of my bigger concerns is there's so many, you know, cooks in the kitchen now, especially on the offensive line and on the offense in general. So it's going to be, you know, I think the Eagles last year, they did like a weird thing where they didn't have an offensive coordinator and they like brought in a bunch of these veteran guys and everybody kind of had a voice and Doug Peterson was calling the plays, but they had like four other guys that did different things. And it was a disaster as you saw the Eagles last year. I don't think it'll be the same with the Giants. I think they have better structure, but there are a lot of voices in the room.
I do agree. It's like, okay, you bring in Rob Sale, you praise Rob Sale as this guy who's a great, you know, developer of talent and all of those things. And yet he's a first time NFL, you know, assistant coach. And you bring in Pat Flaherty, you put Freddie Kitchens in a role where you're saying one of his primary responsibilities is going to be the offensive line. And you know that Joe is paying attention. You know, I watched one of the practices the other day and he was sort of looming directly in front of the offensive line as I watched practice unfold. And of course Jason's got some input into what's going on there as well. So it just seems like a lot, as you said, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and you wonder how it's all going to play out. And yet I look at it, I'm good with their decision to go with some of these young guys. I mean, this is what they drafted these guys for a year ago. And they drafted Matt Peart to be the starting right tackle in 2021. They drafted Shane Lemieux to be a starting guard. They drafted Andrew Thomas to anchor that line on the left side. And I'm good with them just, you know, letting those guys play and seeing how it unfolds. What I want to ask you about is I get a kick out of the, oh my God, the Giants are actually going to let a bunch of guys that they drafted, they're actually going to let them play and we don't know what they can do. I just get a kick out of the panic.
I think it's from the fan base. I mean, it's the offensive line has been bad for so long now that like, I think it's fair to be skeptical until you see something different kind of thing. Like, you can keep like, you know, oh, this is the year they get better, and then it doesn't happen. I mean, on paper, you know, they cut Kevin Zeitler, who, you know, by most metrics was their best. He wasn't amazing or by any stretch, but he was their best guy. They cut him for money, brought back Nate Solder, who the last time they saw him, he was one of the worst offensive linemen in the NFL. So I get the questions but I think the Giants are making a clear statement that we believe in the talent, and they clearly, you know, by their actions feel like the coaching was the issue, not the players. Because if they felt it was the players, they would have changed the players, and they didn't change any of them. So Matt Peart, you know, I think he showed flashes last year. I think they were smart in the way they eased him in. We'll see if that pays off this year. Shane Lemieux wound up playing a lot more than I expected, and I'm sure that experience would be great. And one thing everybody's got to remember is last year was a weird offseason. Obviously, they didn't have OTAs, minicamp. There was no preseason, and everybody always says offensive line is the hardest adjustment to the NFL. So, you know, those first 4 weeks were like their preseason. They were terrible in those first 4 weeks. They were still pretty bad through the first half of the year. They got better in the second half of the year as they started playing together more. So you hope like with the chemistry they're building and like in theory, like the development should push ahead, and Shane Lemieux can't be much worse. And, you know, Andrew Thomas showed some real flashes at the end of last year. He has to continue that. Like, they have the pieces to, like, in theory be good, but it's like, so I talked to an expert, his name's Dan Hatman. He's a former scout of the Eagles. He used to work with the Giants. And he told me that you only really need 3 out of 5 offensive linemen that are good to like, and you can like make it work with the other two spots. So if 3 of these guys, like, you, in theory, you think Andrew Thomas and Nick Gates are the ones they're banking on being good. So if one of Shane Lemieux, Will Hernandez at a new position and Matt Peart at right tackle. Like, so if one of those guys can, you know, exceed what they did last year, then they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, Dan happens to be, Dan's a guy that's been on this show, you know, a few times.
Very smart guy.
He's a good guy. Runs the scouting academy, knows his stuff. So I'm going to have to ask him about that. 3 out of 5. Huh? Does that mean you and I could take the other two spots?
Well, his thing was like, you can like, you know, rotate different guys in there, figure out who works, and like, you don't have to worry about it as much. But if you have at least three, then your offensive line is probably going to be good. Cause most offensive line, there might be a weak link, but he looks okay when he's next to a bunch of good offensive linemen kind of thing.
Yeah. There's always that. There's always one of the things I think people don't get is there's always that if the guy next to you is really, really struggling, it can impact, you know, if the right guard next to you is really struggling, then it's going to impact the center or it's going to impact the right tackle.
I mean, sorry to cut you off, but I mean, if you look at last year, like how much better Andrew Thomas played with Shane Lemieux than Will Hernandez. Like I know some offensive linemen will say that's overblown, but I mean, if you just look at the numbers, it's like a fact. He played significantly better with Lemieux than he did with Hernandez. So maybe there's just a different comfort level there with those guys. And that's important, obviously. Hernandez is going to be an interesting one this year because I wasn't 100% sure they'd bring him back. He's going to be playing a new position. I mean, Zach Fulton, he doesn't seem like he's actually a threat to the starting job based on what we saw in minicamp. But, you know, Will Hernandez, this is like a make or break year for him. So I'm very interested to see how he looks at a new – he's never played right guard, I don't believe.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, so
– it's, you know, the Giants have never really talked that much about Hernandez last year. I can't believe, you know, they've never really – he said, oh, he was benched or why he didn't play, yeah, you know, that many snaps. They haven't addressed it. They haven't officially admitted, you know, that he's the right guard. Yeah. It's a little bit bizarre, but I have to believe that he was impacted by COVID.
It's important to point that out. Yeah, he got COVID, and then maybe he never physically was the same. Who knows?
But it's interesting. He's never been. I think people have the impression that he's been awful.
Yeah,
and he's never been awful. He's just never been Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, I mean, and he got all that hype when they picked him the second round, and he had that great combine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very strange situation. I mean, it's not like he was playing amazing before he got COVID either, but I did not expect him to leave. Like, if you remember, he had played every single, like, snap in his career at that point, which is
right.
I mean, we talked to him, like, once when he got back from COVID. Mm-hmm. I don't think we ever talked to him because we did the Zoom thing, so they were never going to give a backup offensive lineman to us, I guess.
No, they weren't going to give us Will, since they probably didn't want him to talk anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like I know he's been working with Duke Manyweather this offseason, who's, you know, an offensive line guru that works with some big time guys. So he's taking it seriously. I think he seems like if you just base it off like Instagram photos and hangouts, he seems to be pretty popular amongst, like, he's always hanging out with like Daniel Jones and Saquon and stuff. So I think he's pretty well liked in that room. I mean, I'm sure that they all came up together, obviously, in the draft and stuff. I mean, but yeah, I mean, he's in the last year of his deal. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. And they don't really have any. I mean, Zach Fulton, again, like, he's a veteran. So their backup offensive line is kind of interesting because they have all these veteran guys, although none of them were that great as starters.
But they're all guys who, like, if you have to plug them in for a game or two, you can survive with that, and that works. But they're all guys, kind of like we found out last year with Cam Fleming. They're all guys who, if you've got to play them for a couple games, you're fine. But if you want to start them for 16 games,
not ideal.
You're going to find out why,
that's why it's crazy to think about that. Cam Fleming wound up starting all 16 games. I don't think I would have predicted that before the season. So
Nope. Would not have seen that coming at all. But, you know, there's two guys we haven't talked about as we sort of wrap up. And that, of course, is Saquon and Daniel Jones. And, you know, we got a chance to talk to Saquon a little bit there, I think, in mini camp. And Do you have the impression that the Giants and maybe Saquon himself just aren't sure he's going to be ready to handle a full workload, you know, week one, you know, when the season starts?
As we've gone on, it seems more and more like that, right? Right. Just the way they've talked and the way they've really they're emphasizing how they're taking it slow with him, which is a smart move. There's no reason at all to rush him back. I mean, I think they're inevitably going to pay him a lot of money at some point. And so they want to make sure that their investment is worth it. So they need him to get it through a season this year. Like, he needs it for his sake. They need it for their sake. They've, you know, I know Dave Gettleman has tried to say that Devontae Booker is a three down back. I don't believe that personally. He's an interesting player, but so they need Saquon at his best. And, you know, everybody went from talking about how he's not going to miss a beat, but I mean, and everybody like thinks about, you know, this is this physical freak. So obviously he's going to be fine. But I mean, ACLs, if you look at like Dalvin Cook, his first year back he was not good. And then the year after that is when he went off. And so I think they're going to have to try and be patient with him. I'm not necessarily saying he can't be really good this year, but yeah, I am very interested to see how it works. Like training camp, I wonder how much we see of him. Maybe by the end, he's a limited guy. Maybe he misses week one, or he's, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's, they ease him in and they start Booker that week. Like it's very much more up in the air than I thought it was going to be, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the thing of it is everyone is hoping for the Adrian Peterson comeback Saquon.
I think Adrian be that the expectation.
Yeah. And yet I think the reality of it is the Adrian Peterson comeback is the exception to the rule. Not, you know, it's not something that should be expected.
No, I mean, there's way more cases of guys that don't ever become the same player again after an ACL. But I think like, I would say, a more reasonable expectation would be the Dalvin Cook timeline where, you know, he shows some flashes maybe that first year and it's not quite himself. And then the next year, I mean, the Giants can't really afford him to not be himself as
right. You know, before we talk about Daniel Jones, which will kind of wrap it up for us here. I wanted to ask you, I know that, that you had an opportunity to get to know, Gary Brightwell a little bit, you know, back in the day when you were working out in Arizona. Just some thoughts on Brightwell, you know, who was a bit of a, you know, I kind of expected the Giants to take a running back there late in the draft, figuring there just wasn't much depth in the room. And then they went out and they brought in Corey Clement and Reichwell Armstead as well. But, you know, which kind of proved my point, but just some thoughts on Brightwell, who I thought was a surprise as a pick for the Giants.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, so I, just to give some background to your listeners, like I, before I came back east, I went to school at University of Arizona, and then I worked at the Arizona Daily Star for 4.5 years covering football and basketball. And my last year, which was like 2017, was his freshman year. And so it's just crazy because Gary has this like crazy story where his dad was murdered when he was a child. His sister died in a car crash right before he went out to college. And then I found out I did another story. So I to bring it full circle. I did like a story on him when he was drafted by the Giants, obviously, and talked to his mom, and his grandma died the morning of his pro day. He's lost friends to COVID and, you know, gun violence, and from where he's from, like he's dealt with more loss than any human being should have to deal with. And just like he's got a good head on his shoulders. He just wants to work hard. He's not someone who's going to get into trouble. In terms of like play, like I was surprised he got drafted. Everything I saw was that he was projected to go undrafted. But you know, I'd stopped following Arizona a little bit after I left. I didn't realize how much he played on special teams. And then when you talk to people, you realize like that, like really was where they got attracted to him. His ability to be a gunner on special teams and get down there. He really tries hard down there. And I think he can develop into like a good running back. I don't know if he's ready to play on offense right now. He looked pretty good in the practice we saw. I think he showed some pretty good hands and some athleticism. But
yeah, it was hard to tell much of anything about any players during during the mini camp and OTAs, which I didn't see the OTAs. But usually you come out of spring practices with an idea of, you know, three or four guys to kind of, you know, who might have gotten your attention. And practices weren't structured that way. I mean, there was really zero competition.
That's a funny, like, you look at like the Jets, we were doing like full-on team drills, like full speed, not hitting, obviously. And so you saw all these takeaways from like the Jets tweets and stuff like that. And then us, like I had to do like observations after every mini camp practice, and it got harder and harder as it went on. Cause like you said, I mean, number one, they were like in the far field where we can't really see them that well. Mm-hmm. And then like, they're going so slow, and, you know, and even in the team drills, the defense isn't even allowed to defend the passes. So like, there's a, you know, the catch that Kenny Golladay had that like went viral on Twitter among fans, like the quarterbacks weren't allowed to put their hands up. So
yeah, it's a one-on-one catch with no defense. Jeepers. Yeah,
sure, good catch, good throw, but I would hope they make that catch and that throw when nobody can do it. So
yeah, I got a kick out of
it. Like you said, it was very hard to like figure out who played. Like, all we could do was base it on like who was running with who, like in terms of like first.
Yeah, you could get some interesting. Oh, that's an interesting grouping here and there, but as far as to say so and so played well during mini camp or so and so played poorly, there was really no playing.
Yeah, exactly.
so
we're all very much chomping at the bit to get to training camp where we can actually like figure stuff out.
And actually, from the sounds of it, actually talk to people face to face.
I'm looking forward to that very much.
You and me both. Hey, the one guy we haven't talked about, so let's wrap it up with this, Daniel Jones. And obviously, you've written about him a bunch. I've written about him a bunch. Everybody's written about him a bunch. I mean, when all else fails, you write about the quarterback anyway. Yeah. But just, you know, and we know what the hope is for Daniel Jones. The Giants are hoping for a Josh Allen-esque, maybe not to that extent, but a Josh Allen-esque leap in year three. Where are you on Daniel Jones? Do you think he's a guy who can be the Giants quarterback for a while, or, you know, when you think about it, do you think a year from now the Giants are going to be back in the market?
Man, it's going to be pretty much the number one thing we write about this year. You know, I've said for since the offseason started, I think that he's not as bad as like the national perception of him is. And I don't think he's maybe as good as the Giants think he is. So I think he's somewhere in the middle. I think he can be like a guy that is, you know, if he cuts back on the turnovers, which he started doing last year, he can be a guy that's not going to lose you a game, that can like run the offense and, you know, make some big plays with his legs and maybe down the field. But I also don't think he's a guy that's, you know, going to single-handedly win a game for you necessarily. He's a very interesting player. Like he's big, he's athletic, and in theory has a big arm that should be able to go down the field. But, you know, he still makes a lot of the same. Last year, he made a lot of the same mistakes he did his first year. And you just make some decisions where you're like, what were you thinking there? And it was so hard to evaluate him last year just because the offensive line was so bad and the receivers just did not get open, and Evan Engram dropped everything that was thrown to him in key moments. And, again, you can make all the excuses in the world for a guy, but at the end of the day, he has to like prove that, you know, he's as good as the Giants think he is. And he hasn't done that yet. So what do I think happens? I don't know, man. It's like so hard to predict just because we don't know how the offensive line is going to look, but I think he'll be better. Like, he can't be worse than he was last year. 11 touchdowns in 14 games is just like unfathomable to me. If you, the more you say it, it's just to play that many games in a passing league and to throw 11 touchdowns is just wild.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. It's in one way that it's very, very difficult to judge a guy when, you know, when there's so much around him that's not optimal. And yet I think it was Mike Tannenbaum that I talked to, former Jets GM, now runs a website called the 33rd Team, and he does a lot of work for ESPN. And Mike said, you know, sooner or later, no matter what's around a guy, he's got to show us that he's the guy.
Yep.
And I think Daniel Jones has shown us a lot of reasons to think he might be the guy. He's got the personality. He's got the, you know, he's got the smarts. He's got the athleticism to make some plays, you know, with his legs. And yet he hasn't shown us yet that he is the guy. And I think that's what he has to do this year. Otherwise, you know, otherwise I think, you know, there could be a lot of turnover in the Giants at the end of this year.
Yeah. I mean, you're the quarterback, so you expect it, but I mean, there's a lot of people's jobs are on the line that are banking on him. But at the same time, like the Giants with that Bears trade, which I think is universally adored for a good reason. Like they have the ammo to move up and go get a guy next year if they really want to.
If they don't have
a lot of cap space, right, next year, which I think they expected. So I don't know if they're going to, you know, trade for a veteran guy necessarily, but I think they can move up. I don't know this quarterback class very well. I'm sure somebody will emerge. They have enough assets to move up and get somebody if they really wanted to.
Yeah, I was going to say our Mark Schofield, who's a quarterback analyst, does some work for us, does some work for some other places, took kind of an initial look at this quarterback class. Certainly at this time last year, we knew a lot of the names of guys.
Yeah.
And, the one coming up doesn't seem to be that kind of a quarterback class. But you're right. The Giants have those two first-round picks. They've got some other things they could do. They can always package those two picks and go get themselves into the top three or four if they needed to. But, you know, hopefully they don't have to do that, because I don't know about you, but, you know, I feel like it sure would be nice to spend my days writing about a good football team for a change.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you and I talked about this a little before we got on the pod. Like, a lot of times, like, fans get mad when media, like, is negative. But when your team, when a team is, like, 1-7, like the Giants, where last year you write about it, but it doesn't mean we want them to be losing. Like, we're not rooting for them to win or to lose necessarily. And covering a winning team is better than covering a losing team. I covered the Eagles for 2 years, and the first year, like when they went on a run at the end of the year to make the playoffs, like those like 4 weeks, and then in the playoffs, so it was just like really exciting stuff. And I'm sure you've dealt with that covering Giants when they last made the playoffs with Beckham and all that stuff.
It's a lot more fun when they win. It's
more fun, and people have more interest in your stories, and that's where we're based on, you know, people reading our stories. So
guys are a lot easier to talk to as well.
Yeah, guys are more willing and easier to talk to. You know, there's no like contention when we have to ask like why they got, you know, killed in a game or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I got repetitive. Those first 8 weeks got really repetitive with Joe Judge, because he kept saying the same stuff. We're like, okay, you believe you're doing the right thing. Okay, you're 1-7. Mm-hmm. We'll end up obviously playing a lot better the second half. Yeah. Like the second half of the year, we got pretty fun towards the end. Like the games weren't all that exciting.
I do remember, you know, Joe has a way of letting you know when he doesn't like your question, although he'll be nice about it. But I don't remember what game it was, but there was one point in the year where, you know, Joe talked about progress all year long. And there was one point where I asked him, Joe, you just got beat by 30 some points or whatever it was. I said, yeah, it's your fourth loss in a row or whatever. How can you call this progress? and he just basically said, well, I see it on film. Okay, then.
Yeah, I would say even Joe is a better interview for us when they're winning, because when he's losing, he kind of just repeats the same talking points. But
yeah, that is very, very true. Hey, Zach, appreciate the time, appreciate the insight. Maybe we'll do it again, and it'll be fun to actually sit in some face-to-face interviews this summer. Hey, just let folks know if they don't already know, you know, where they can find your work, where they can find you on Twitter, what you might have coming up.
Yeah, I'm at Zach Blatt on Twitter, ZACKBLATT. You can get all my content at nj.com/Giants. We'll still be writing throughout the summer. Like, you got to get more creative when the offseason, this part of the offseason. But I mean, I try to write like profiles about guys and, you know, off the beaten path kind of stuff. So I'll be there, and I'm looking forward to getting back to training camp and seeing Ed and getting back out there and writing some observations about some real football.
There you go. All right, Zach, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, I was going to tell you, I had to laugh. You were talking about Will Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance. I don't know if you saw. All right, Giants fans, that's our show for today. Thanks again to Zach Rosenblatt of NJ Advanced Media for spending some time with us. A quick reminder again to check out Big Blue View on all of our different podcast channels. and all of our different platforms, YouTube, Instagram, our website, Facebook, Twitter. We've got content for you all over the place, YouTube as well. So please check us out anywhere and everywhere that you consume information. There's something Big Blue View there for you. So please check out all of the channels that you can. All right, Giants fans, please remember, stay safe out there, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.